This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And today, we are joined not only by the audience at WRKF in Baton Rouge, but also by our friends at WWNO on the lakefront in New Orleans, the two preeminent public radio stations in our state, which is guided by Jeffrey Martin Landry, the 57th Louisiana governor. He's now been on the job for 9 months, and he is with us. Your number is 877-217-5757, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. How are we doing, Jim?
Doing great. You sound like you're full of energy. Have you had a few Red Bulls this morning?
Not yet, but I had plenty of tea, and the Red Bulls will be this afternoon. How about that?
Okay. Whatever it takes. But you have been an activist governor. I think you would concur with that. You're not resting on your laurels after winning without a runoff last year. How would you characterize the first 9 months?
Wow, hectic. A lot to do. I think that the first 9 months have been extremely successful. I think that the people of this state are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. I think that the legislature is finding a good place. We've actually worked with them in a way that they've never worked at the speed they've worked before. We're getting ready to bring them back in. I told them that hopefully it's certainly going to be for the last time this year. And of course, if we fix this, I only foresee us maybe having to go maybe one more special session for the next 3 years, quite frankly. And that would be to do some stuff on infrastructure. I think it's good. I think that people are starting to see some opportunity out there. And look, if we get this tax reform package put together, I mean, Jim, it would be unbelievable, really unbelievable.
And you're talking like a person who plans on being in office at least one term, but of course, a person of your stature has options, and you're very close to the former president who is in a neck-and-neck race. He might offer you a job, a big job. Would you take it?
No, I'm not leaving, Jim. I'm not. I mean, look, I had that discussion during the Republican National Convention when we went out to Milwaukee and told the president's team that I would do anything in the world to help them win. And then if they're successful, to do what they could to find great people to fill those cabinet roles and help them from Louisiana. But we've got this is a generational opportunity that we have here in Louisiana. And so I'm very content in remaining here for 4 years, and we'll see what appetite the voters have after that.
Well, our hearts go out to our friends in Florida, and of course, at hurricane season, this could have been Louisiana. And are you in touch with Governor DeSantis about the calamity, catastrophe that Hurricane Milton has inflicted upon the Sunshine State?
Yeah, we've been on the phone since Helene with different governors, spoken to the governor of South Carolina, officials in North Carolina, the governor of Tennessee and of Georgia. We've sent assets, I know, to North Carolina for sure, and we had some assets in Florida even before this storm. I think the National Guard, last I checked, has a 500-man engineer battalion that's experienced in doing these kind of things. That they may be in Florida by now. I hadn't had a chance to check. But that we're sending over there to help Governor DeSantis. I tell you, Jim, I prayed real hard. I hate to pray a storm on somebody else, but certainly Louisiana has been spared, and I'm thankful that, you know, even in the midst of the destruction that they've had through Hurricane Milton, it could have been a lot worse based upon the strength of that particular storm. And so anything we can do to reciprocate the help that many states have given us when we've taken our licks, we look forward to helping Florida as well.
877-217-5757, and we are here to talk primarily with the governor about his tax reform plan. And he has offered a sweeping change in the way Louisianians would be taxed. He believes it's a better mousetrap than the one we've had. What are the principal objectives of this?
That's an interesting way to describe it, a mousetrap. I like that, Jim. I might have to Look, I think that number one, here's the most important thing. If we pass this package as is or in a better position, and the voters vote on a rewrite of Article 7, number one, this will immediately mean more money in the pockets of every worker in Louisiana. Every man and woman working out there is going to receive more in the pocket. We're going to take our income tax to the lowest of any state that has an income tax left. We're going to virtually eliminate the bottom bracket and take the next two brackets and collapse them and go to a flat 3%. We're going to double, let me say this, we're going to double the retirement income exemption for seniors to make it attractive for seniors to stay here and come to Louisiana. We're going to more closely align the state and local sales tax basis, which has been really, I think, just a bad policy for the legislature to tell the state, the locals, what they can and can't tax, and then we tax something and say they can't tax that. We're going to line that out so it's very even keeled. This is going to bring more revenue opportunities for the locals, right? We're going to eliminate once and for all the tax on prescription drugs at both the state and the local level. We're going to lower the corporate income tax from 7.5% to 3.5%. It's a 4% decrease, making it one of the lowest in the nation. We're going to eliminate the corporate franchise tax, which is a problem. We're going to give parishes the opportunity to eliminate the inventory tax, and it's going to be a parish by parish decision. We're going to lift the cap on the severance for locals, again, giving locals an opportunity for more stable revenue streams, right? And we're going to make permanent a teacher pay raise by paying down debt on the UL, and then that debt, those debt payments that those school boards are making to the state will then be used to permanently fund a teacher pay raise. That is extremely, extremely responsible. And if we do all of these things, this will produce the biggest tax change in our state since 1974. And the Tax Foundation says that it will take us from the bottom 10 to the top 10. In one session, and a vote of the people will go from the bottom of 10 to the top 10. So that's it. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Okay, well,
great plan.
It takes legislative approval, and based on what you're saying, this sounds like a constitutional change that would require voter approval. Is that the way you see it, or is there a way to do it with simply the legislature giving its consent?
No, this is going to, everybody is going to get a say in this, and I think that's important as well. Everybody gets an opportunity to point Louisiana in the right direction. This gives us a rewrite of Article 7, which needs to be done. We're going to eliminate 60% of the words in Article 7, which is unbelievable, right? The thing is just cluttered up there. Give the legislature more flexibility to address budgeting and expenditures. And I think, again, points us in the right direction. But yes, it will take a constitutional ballot, an amendment that we're going to put on the ballot in March.
There are 10 different bills, though, aren't there?
Yeah, there's 10 bills in our package, and they may, and look, it is kind of a little bit of a moving target because we sent the bills over to the legislature so that their staff could take a look at it for drafting and correcting and redlining and grading. And they're tinkering with them to make sure that they're in the proper posture and they do the things that we're trying to achieve. We may end up with 10, we may end up with 8, we may end up with 12. One of them being the constitutional rewrite. That will be one. We'll be able to do the constitutional changes in one bill, which is really exciting.
Now, these bills that you just mentioned involve cuts and obligations, and of course, if we cut income taxes, there has to be revenue coming from somewhere. What are the new sources of revenue to offset the loss of the money that the state derives from income taxes?
Well, what we're proposing is to leave in place the 0.45 sales tax that's in there. And remember, there's a number of exemptions that were taken off of that 0.45. We're also eliminating 111 exemptions from the sales tax, which our sales taxes are riddled with over 217 exemptions, the most of any other state. And so what we did is we looked at those exemptions in relation to other states and how they implemented their sales tax. And we tried to select and go and comb through those 217 and then ended up with 111 that are basically choices. I think that people, you know, it's like a luxury, right?
Right.
And so when we clean that penny, when we take those exemptions off, that's what the kind of the political term is, cleaning the pennies. When we do that, we're able to offset those. I'll tell you this, Jim, I think the thing's going to raise more revenue than anyone thinks.
Okay, we do have to take an 89-second timeout, but we will return with the 57th Louisiana Governor, Jeff Landry, after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Robin Dow producing, and Governor Landry is with us for a few more minutes. He is a busy man, and we appreciate him taking time to be with us, as he has been for several times since he took the oath of office in January. He has now crossed the nine-month mark as governor, and he's been an activist governor. And Hal and Monroe, he makes a good point, Governor. He remarks that Buddy Romer tried tax reform in his first year as governor, got it to the ballot, and it got 45%. Now, voters sometimes can be contrarian. How are you going to sell this to the people? What you're saying, of course, sounds good, but as far as reducing personal income taxes, but sometimes voters get down in the weeds and see things that we don't. So, what will you make if and when it gets to the ballot?
Well, look, I'm going to just go out there and tell them the truth. We're going to make our case for the good news about it is it's not hard. I got plenty of exhibits. I got Exhibit A, Alabama, Exhibit B, Georgia, Exhibit C, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, all the states around us that are doing so much better than us. And this puts us comparable and actually ahead of them from a tax reform state. We'll make the case to the people. And look, this is a process. We put the bills out. We're asking people to look at them now to give us some input. The legislature, I'm sure, is going to massage it. We're challenging them to look at it, make sure that we didn't miss anything, and then to make it better if they can. And then we take it to the people and just, I mean, look, the people will get an opportunity. They're getting to see it now. Are we talking about it right now? And then they'll see through the legislative process, they'll be able to monitor that. And then we'll go out there and make the case. Mm-hmm. But let me give you an example, Jim. North Carolina, a couple of decades ago, started tax reform. And when they started, the means income, the average family income, medium income, was only $2,000 more than Louisiana. It's not much. So it's comparable. They did the tax reform. Over the last 10 years, that has increased by $11,000. Now, think about what the average family right now could do with an extra $100,000 over 10 years, right?
You're saying they're 11,000 ahead of Louisiana. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. 10 years in a row, they've been $11,000 ahead.
Right. Of course, we do have a lower cost of living than many states, but I hear what you're saying. Keep going, Governor. Keep going.
Well, right. They've attracted way more. They've had millions of people move into the state. Their economic prosperity and quality of life has been much better. And we recognize, look, if you want to move Louisiana up, we got to take people from dependence to independence, right? And the way to do that is with work. When people got work, things fix themselves.
Okay.
And so we know that this tax reform attracts businesses to Louisiana to come and settle here. When we do that, our people prosper.
Did you have to swallow hard to embrace the continuation of the 0.45 cent sales tax?
No, I didn't. I didn't because, look, as I've always believed that responsible tax policy says that you lower the rates and you broaden the base. And that's what we're doing here. I hate the income tax. To me, is the most regressive tax known to man. I mean, the fact that the government can tax a man's labor or a woman's labor is insulting to me, right? I mean, we don't have a choice with our labor. That's all we got. That's what God has given us. And the fact that the government can go out there and tax it, to me, is just it's insulting. And so if I could get rid of the income tax, is what I would really, really like to do. And I also think, Jim, and you've seen this more than anybody else, because you've been around a long time and you've got a PhD in politics here in the state. But we have been through so many different fits and starts, ups and downs, instability in the way that this state budget is reliant on the type of revenue that comes in. This stabilizes that. And we're not guessing at it. We have watched what other states have done. And look, they've been doing it for a while. Since something new. Mm-hmm.
Will the standardized deduction be raised?
The standardized deduction? Oh, in which bracket?
Well, right now, I think it's at a level that is below $10,000 as far as after that, everything is taxed. And now I'm under the impression that this may move it up to like $12,500. Is that right?
Yes. That's correct. That is absolutely correct. It goes to $12,500, and then we double the retirement income exemption for seniors. Okay. Yes, that is correct.
All right. Another item, and of course, people, as you know, get juiced up about the amazing things, and one of them is Mike the Tiger returning to Tiger Stadium. And I noted the other day that the first Tiger, who had a very small habitat, and went to all the games, lived the longest of all the Tigers. He lived 20 years, and you could go see him. He's stuffed over at Foster Hall on the LSU campus. But what about those who say this it would be cruel to Mike to bring him back to Death Valley?
Look, I think that those that are saying it is cruel really don't know what they're talking about. I mean it. I mean, look, as a kid, it was something that was like magical. To myself and many others who've gone into Tiger Stadium. I visited with Governor Jim Pillum from Nebraska, who played football in Nebraska in the late 1970s, came to Tiger Stadium, said it was the stadium he remembered more than anything else in the world, and he remembered the Tiger. And he didn't even know at the time that we were trying to work to get the Tiger on there. Look, here's what I know. You said you hit the nail on the head. Tigers in sanctuaries and in the care of humans live longer than they live in the wild. And if a tiger, like anything else, is trained to address crowds and do it, like there's nothing wrong with that. There's not anything wrong with that in the world. In fact, it only adds to the conservation of the animals. It brings awareness to those. It can be used as a positive rather than be thought of as a negative. And look, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful, Jim. We're going to have us a Tiger on the field this year. I think it's going to be great. I think that people are going to embrace it. It's going to be nostalgic. And quite frankly, it will honor the Mike 1 through 6 of those Tigers that came out there and entertained the fans and brought fear to the opponents, because that's what we want to bring. We want to bring fear to our opponents so we can win.
Well, let's try to get a few questions in, but please, only questions and be concise. You're on with Governor Landry. Patricia in Magnolia Woods in the Baton Rouge area, you have the floor, Patricia. You're on with our governor.
Hey, good morning, Governor. So North Carolina has some great public universities, and I think supporting LSU would help, but LSU has a lot of infrastructure problems, electricity not working, heating, air conditioning not working. What will your tax plan do to funding for LSU?
And other universities. There are a few others in the state that are pretty good ones, by the way. But, Governor, what about higher education? Yeah. Will higher education be protected?
Well, look, I think that this is one of the ways under which we can finally quit using higher education as a whipping boy, right? Which is used every time there's a budget shortfall. We either pull out LDH or our higher ed or our educational system as basically whipping boys in order to get everybody whipped up in normally bad policy place. Look, we put $70 million in deferred maintenance in our universities this year. Okay, that was unheard of. Under this tax reform, if we pass, we think we'll have another chunk of money that we can place to deferred maintenance, right, to continue to repair those things and bring those university buildings up to a particular standard. It also takes the universities off the chopping block for the budget coming up in the spring. And so, again, I would tell you that, look, our idea is to make these universities function for the state of Louisiana. in a way that they're supposed to. And so, again, if that is something that you're concerned about, I think that you would find that this tax package is exactly the thing that you'd want to support.
Well, it is a sweeping plan, and a few listeners have asked about, I mentioned the 10 bills. Will it be one constitutional amendment if it gets to the voters?
Yes. One constitutional amendment. It's all going to be packaged up in there. You got a pay raise for teachers and a double deduction for seniors, and it's all in one vote.
Well, Governor, we thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure, and your energy is infectious, so I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Joe. I hope we get to do it as the process unfolds, and really appreciate the time and the listeners.
Well, we would like that. Your voice is important to our audience and to the people of our state, and Jeff Landry, as stated, is a man on a mission, and he was elected without a runoff. So he'll be back soon on our show, and we'll be back with Mark Ballard after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're joined by Mark Ballard in the Beltway, covering politics from the nation's capital. And for many years, he was the main reporter for the newspaper of record at the state capitol. And I think Mark caught some of Governor Landry's remarks, and the governor is offering sweeping tax reform. So before we go national, the governor is ambitious in many ways, and this is an ambitious plan, and it's an all-or-nothing proposition with a lot of material to digest. How do you think the voters will respond? And usually these things, this won't, of course, won't be on the ballot this year, which means next year probably be a low turnout election. Does that make it a harder sell, Mark?
It probably does. I mean, we need to think back for just a minute, take a step back, and think that there's been attempts to revamp our tax system going back all the way to Dave Treen, which is in the early 80s. And the only time that they've ever succeeded is when you have a powerful governor like Edwin Edwards basically rammed through. I think he did a sales tax increase, and he, you know, pushed through casinos and that sort of thing. And that's when we've seen that these tax plans go out, be successful with the voters. But if you look back, you know, Mike Foster, Bobby Jindal, John Bel Edwards, they all tried to do these kind of sweeping plans, and they just never could get the right traction for it. And they just had to kind of ram through things on the edges. And so the problem is that tax policy tends to be very nuanced, tends to be very detailed, and Louisiana voters all over the country for that matter, just like they like top line answers on this sort of thing, rather than getting down to, you know, a percentage change in tax brackets and what that's going to mean.
877-217-5757 is your number for Mark Ballard, and we have our audience at WRKF and at WWNO with us this hour. And we heard from the governor of Louisiana, and Jeff Landry is taking the chance on public humiliation or great victory. And Buddy Romer rolled the dice, and some people say he never recovered from that fiscal reform vote. It was actually in April of 1989, so it was a little over a year into his term. He took office in 88, so it'd be very similar if Landry pulls this off. And Romer was really confident, Mark, but that confidence was not met with approval from the voters. But as we know, Edwin Edwards and others were on the fringe saying it was a bad plan. Landry does not at this point, it doesn't seem he has the same kind of organized opposition that Buddy Romer had.
Well, and yet, I mean, I was looking at the Senate President Cameron Henry talking about he's going to need to do a lot more of a sales job, you know, to get people on board with it, and comments like that. Yes, I mean, it's not quite the same as it was back in the 80s, but still, he's going to have to do a pretty good. So remember, he's going to have to do a sales pitch and get his Republicans on board, and I'm not altogether sure that they're 100% on board. Remember that he also wanted to rewrite the Constitution, and so in part for revamping the finances in Louisiana, and he was unable to get the support for that from his own Republicans.
Landry is a savvy enough politician that my guess is that he will court some Democrats in the legislature in hopes that they will embrace it and perhaps assuage concerns from particularly minorities communities that this would not be a good thing. But it's a long way from the finish line. It'll have a lot of tweaking, and the governor is bold in moving in this direction. We'll see where it goes, and of course we will follow it with you. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Zach in New Orleans. Zach, you're on with Mark. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Fine.
So my biggest question is that I feel like this, while everybody wants their taxes to be lower, it's just going to be another example of lowering our revenues. I believe according to the Institute for Tax Policy, it's going to cost the state over $1 billion. If we do sunset the sales tax for higher education institutions, that's going to lose $250 million. And most of the tax cuts are going to be going to the wealthiest in our state. So my biggest concern is this is just going to put more burdens on people who can't afford it.
Mark, what about Zach is stating things that have been reported that right now, before it's tweaked, there's a potential $1 billion shortfall, which is still a lot of money.
Yeah, the way this has worked in the past, I mean, remember that there was a plan that was passed under Foster in which that the slightly increase the property taxes and kind of decrease the sales taxes and so that it would work out. And then over time, they basically, increased the sales taxes and got rid of those tax brackets, and we ended up with $1 billion. And I think, that everything looks good when you're doing it, when you're putting pencil to paper, but when you get to the realities, then that's where these things start falling apart.
Thank you, Zach. And it will be fascinating to see how this shakes out. Now a listener echoing, I think, what you were alluding to, saying that this is analogous to the days when Democrats were in control. The Democrats had factions. And it does appear that Cameron Henry, who is probably the most powerful state lawmaker, is occasionally not on the same page with his fellow Republican, the Governor Jeff Landry. How long can that union last before it explodes? Do you think they're in for the long haul, or could this tax plan end up severing their relationship?
Well, I'm not sure explodes is the right verb on this. I think what's going to happen is that, they both have power bases, and I bet that they can't really, fight the other one with. So I think what's going to happen is that there'll be, it'll be a kind of fractious relationship, a little bit of friction there. They'll join when they can, and they'll quietly oppose one another. I mean, this is the way politics works all across, not just Louisiana, but all across the country. So, unless one of them gets a clear advantage and can take out the other one, they're not going to do that. That's not going to happen.
Again, 877-217-5757. Please be brief in your remarks to Mark. David in Atlanta. David, good morning, sir.
Good morning. The state of North Carolina is requesting a 42% increase in casualty property insurance rates. In Louisiana, deregulated the insurance property casualty industry on the pretense it'll bring more competition to the state and lower rates. Allstate, the state's largest casualty insurance provider that's publicly traded.
Okay, what's your question, David?
Well, it felt nicely on Wall Street today. I don't think Allstate and the insurance providers are too concerned about this new competition. If anything, rates seem to be going a lot higher.
All right. What about the insurance crisis, which is one of the big issues in our state? It affects quality of living and whether or not people want to stay in Louisiana. Mark, in your view, how serious is the situation?
Well, I think it's, regardless of his political monologue, I think this is a very serious situation of which North Carolina is just now getting a taste of what we've been dealing with for years. And that basically is that the insurance companies, they they're in business to make money and for their shareholders, and they're basically in business to take our money and to avoid making as many payouts as they can. And along the Gulf Coast, what we've discovered, not just in Louisiana, but Texas and Mississippi and Florida, have all discovered that the insurance companies really don't want to insure our homes because we have the tendency of having to make too many claims on it. And that's, they've kind of wiggled out of hurricane coverage, the wind coverage, and that's whenever there's a named storm in the Gulf that basically that they don't have to cover. There's a certain percentage of it which that they won't cover. That's, they got out of the flood insurance business years ago, and I mean that has created a crisis for homeowners in along the Gulf Coast because we just can't hold mortgages without this insurance. It's required by the financial lenders, and so yeah, that's the crisis. What's the answer to it? Well, Congress can't really get their hands around it, but I do think it's going to have to be kind of a national answer because you know there's nothing to keep a Allstate or any of these guys in Louisiana when they can make more money in Iowa.
All right, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning.
Good morning.
Downtown Baton Rouge, I believe. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Does Landry's tax plan smack of the Grover Norquist blueprint, pandering to the most right-wingers of the GOP?
Well, Landry has some things in there I don't think Grover would like, but Grover, of course, was a mentor of Bobby Jindal, and we haven't heard much from him lately, but is Grover still out there making noise about the way we should do business in Louisiana, Mark?
Not as loudly as he once was, but he is still out. He is still out. His group still is making noise. It's not as once upon a time, you know, they would sign those tax pledges, and that would be a big part of their the politicians' campaigns, and it's not quite that way now.
Well, and Governor Jindal had to get Grover's approval before he would advocate an increase in the cigarette tax, and that was right at the end of the Jindal 8 years. But our government was literally starved. King Alexander at LSU said he had 13 budget cuts, and I think that's what people fear. If we have a major shortfall, obviously you've got to cut health care and higher education. That's where the brunt of the burden is, and we'll talk with Mark another quarter hour after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO, standing tall and proud on the lakefront in New Orleans, and WRKF in Baton Rouge, not far from the state capital, a few miles away, and even closer to Louisiana State University, two of the major entities in this community, and both are known far and wide. And Mark Ballard spent many years down at the Capitol in Baton Rouge, the house that Huey built. But now he's in Washington, D.C., and we will go back to the phone lines. Your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. But Mark wrote a column a few days ago about the U.S. Supreme Court weighing Louisiana's redistricting case. And Garrett Graves, of course, believes that this was constitutionally wrong, and he is the person who lost his congressional seat. Cleo Fields is the favorite to win, but he has strong challenges from the left side of the spectrum, from a young man named Quentin Anderson, and from the right, from the veteran Elbert Lee Guillory. But Mark, what will determine whether the Supreme Court approves or negates the move by the legislature to have a second majority district, and one, by the way, that was initiated by Governor Landry?
Well, I think that I think it's going to be, at least in talking to legal scholars and people who watch this very closely, and it's a very complex litigation that's been going on for years now. But I think what's going to end up being is interpretations on whether the legislature acted out of a need to add a second minority majority district or out of politics. And basically, the friction comes because the Equal Protection Clause says you can't do these things based on race alone. Yet the Voting Rights Act says that that you need to have a somewhat of equity in the districts that would allow, that would provide for Black voters to have a chance to elect one of their own in roughly the same percentage of the of their population within the state, which in our state is a third. And we kept hearing, and basically that the, you know, three divided by six, the number of congressional delegations is two. And so they, the courts, some of the courts have said that, yes, there needs to be two Black majority districts, or Black opportunity districts is what they call them. And then you have other courts basically arguing that you can't do that and still be within the law. And that is what they're trying to decide. And how this is all going to work out is anyone's guess. But basically, there was a case that came out of South Carolina in which it removed, you know, like 60% of the Black voters out of one district and put them into another district so that they could create a Republican district. And the 6-3 majority on the court said, well, yeah, that politics in this case, the legislature wanted to do this for political reasons rather than racial reasons, so that was okay. And I think what's going to happen is that the Supreme Court will send it, the case back to Louisiana judges and say, why don't you take a look at it based on our decision in South Carolina, and then send it back up. Then we'll decide. So,
all right. Now,
long-winded, but it's hard to explain.
There's some moving parts, but it does not affect the November 5th election. So, it won't affect the next 2 years.
But, right. And we may end up having the same map for 2026 when the Congress runs in the midterms.
Independent of what the high court rules. But you also had a front page story Monday that the trial bench, the federal bench in Louisiana, will soon have not one, not two, not three, but four vacancies. What's going on here?
Right. And it actually, I guess it does officially have four vacancies now. I think what's going on here is that we're running too close to the election. This is not just this year, but it's happened in almost every election season, most famously in 2016 when the Senate just held up any confirmation hearings for Merrick Garland onto the Supreme Court. But they just basically stopped operating. And the way that it works basically is that the White House and the two senators have to kind of agree on who they're going to nominate, because either of the two senators could just derail that nomination. And so they just haven't been able to kind of agree on anybody. So it looks like we're going to be not getting any nominations for any of these vacancies, one of which has been for more than 2 years, until well into after the election into 2025.
All right. Now, a listener notes that the federal deficit is now, as the fiscal year just completed, September 30th is the fiscal year that the end of the fiscal year for the U.S. government, $1.8 trillion. That's what the U.S. is in the red. And a listener asks about whether or not Louisiana can run a deficit in this billion-dollar shortfall be addressed at another point. No, the state can't do that. But the listener also notes correctly that as bad as the $1.8 trillion is, it's down from $3.1 trillion under the previous president, Donald John Trump. But red ink in Washington, the debt is now $36 trillion, is not new. But, Mark, red ink in Louisiana constitutionally is not permitted unless they change that too.
Not permitted at all. They have to have a balanced budget every year. And legally cannot do that. Now there's some accounting smoke and mirrors that they use and have and often do, but at the end of the year they have to have a balanced budget, and that differs from what the federal government does.
877-217-5757 for Mark Bauer, James in Metairie. Hello, James. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, Jim and Mark. Two questions for you, Mark. I noticed when Nelson outlined some of these proposals, he talked about taxing services such as landscaping. Now, there's very little landscaping going on in my block, but a heck of a lot of yard maintenance. Are they going to tax guys who cut grass? And the second question is, aren't you surprised they're not going after the hated targets of the right, the trial lawyers they accuse of increasing insurance costs?
All right. The trial lawyers made their peace with Governor Landry, and he has kept his end of the bargain, hasn't he, Mark?
Yeah, that'll be interesting because there has often been talk about the about not just trial lawyers, but, you know, legal services in general, and as well as like accounting services, you know, and that sort of thing. So, apparently that's not going to be a thing, but it has in the past. So,
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson, please be brief, Phil. You're on with Mark.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Do you think that Governor Landry will take a look at the Louisiana share of the federal gas tax? I don't think that's been addressed since 1996, but I doubt he'll do anything that raises taxes on Exxon.
What about Phil's sentiments? We haven't had a gas tax increase, by the way, in since 1990, I believe, 34 years. But Mark,
I was under the impression that that the state pretty much decided the gas tax as far as what was Louisiana was going to collect, and the federal government decided its tax based on what the federal government was going to collect. But there wasn't coordination between the two of them. I may be incorrect on that, and you certainly can. Correct me on the way. I think what they're looking at mostly is increasing Louisiana's percentage of the taxes from offshore oil production and drilling activities.
Randy in Zachary. Randy, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. My question to you, Mark, is I've seen Junior Letlow running commercials about how many millions of dollars she's bringing back to Louisiana. And I don't see her voting record supporting that. Could you tell me if I'm right or wrong when I question her voting record supporting what she says she's doing for Louisiana?
All right. What about Julia Letlow? Now, she was not in Congress when the votes were made on the infrastructure, which many of all the Republicans voted against except Cassidy. And many, of course, are taking credit for the money that's coming in. But is Letlow perhaps... exaggerating a bit, Mark?
I mean, exaggerating, yeah. I mean, but all of them do. You know, actually, Troy Carter also voted for the infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, so, I said Republicans.
Right. Republicans, yes. Only Cassidy. And yes, they do. The Republicans who voted against this measure is perfectly happy to stand in front of any of the money that comes in the way of projects. She's also talking about what is called what are called earmarks, and you know, and this is a specific amounts of money that don't actually go through the appropriations project. She also is talking about appropriations that favor mostly Northeast Louisiana and the agricultural community, you know, yes, there's probably a bit of over-exaggeration on it, but everybody tends to over-exaggerate when you're a politician running for re-election.
Well, thank you, Mark. We'll talk again next week, and thank you for joining us. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.